Welcome to Keep Making Movies, the podcast where we explore, shall we say, movies that may have needed a bigger budget. We evaluate the movie for what it is, decide if it could have been improved with a budget, and if it'll join our Keep Making Movies official recommend list. I'm your host, KJ, and with me is...
Tom.
Today, we are discussing Joel Haver's Island from 2019. This is Joel Haver's fourth feature-length film. In Island, we follow the lead character, played by Joel, who is on an island, and he's kind of going through some, like an episode of some kind. There are puppets of various birds and sea creatures that he interacts with. Eventually, he tries to make a photocopy of his hand and other body parts. That does not work. So he calls tech support and tries to connect with the tech support guy. He does eventually make it off the island, which brings us to the second half of the movie, where he's kind of wandering around Florida, talking to different groups of people, either getting to know them or connecting with them or having conversations to either learn more about them or learn what they're doing at this point. And this all leads to a final conversation in Disney World while the fireworks are going off in the Magic Kingdom, when he's on the phone with one of his friends from back home. And the fireworks are often making it so the audio is inaudible. It's blowing out the mic. So you're kind of just getting snippets. And this is Joel Haver's 2019 Island.
All right, KJ. So you brought this movie to our attention. In a very busy weekend, I squeezed in time to see this movie. So what do you think the goals of the creator were?
So I think Joel's goals were to show a manic depressive episode where the island part is a depressive episode where you feel disconnected from everybody. Anything you see seems impossible, right? He's in his living room filming this with a sheet and a projector where he's projecting what looks like videos of water to give the idea that he's on an island. And there's kind of a, I don't know if it's literally paper mache, but it's kind of a palm tree to make sure you know he's on an island. And it feels the whole time to me that he's just, maybe he's on an island, but what he really is distant from everything and everybody. And then the second half of the movie, it feels a little manic to me in that he's just walking around, going up to strangers without fear, without reserve, without any reservation, and just talking to them. And it's a pretty safe environment. It's not a risky behavior. But the fact that he's doing that over and over and over again, at one point he says to a girl he meets, "Hey, I just wish I could run and chase these seagulls. I've seen other people do it, and I might be afraid, but maybe we'll do that." And then they run and they do that. And again, I think that's, it's the idea of, well, before I was completely disconnected and isolated, now I'm overdoing it and I'm overconnecting to anybody and everybody I come across. And then that final note of the movie there, that conversation he has, it kind of ties it all together in that he's talking to somebody who may have seen him go through these episodes before, and he's kind of not quite reflecting on them, but he's like checking in like, "Hey, I think I'm maybe on the other side. And now I'm talking to somebody who knows me, that has seen me in, you know, normal mode, so to say, depressive mode and manic mode." So I think the goal of Island was to kind of show one of these episodes. How about you, Tom? What do you think?
I think that's really good. I would take a little bit of exception to the idea of him being in a manic state. He acts oddly sometimes, but not really. He's mostly not acting that oddly, and he's not really that manic, right? I could see it as a stand-in for a burst of energy when before he was depressed and didn't have any energy, which would be the island sections. I read it differently once I saw the whole thing together, because when you first see it, the first half of the movie is a man filming in his living room, and the low budget is not something he's trying to hide. In fact, it's something he's trying to highlight. He's really into these zero budget films. That's kind of what he's known for. And it's mostly his Castaway, right? It's the Castaway with Tom Hanks, the Robert Zemeckis movie. That's but with no money and no lines, things like a fish that he's killed comes to life and starts talking to him. There's a bird that I don't think it talks, it just tweets irritatingly at him. He gets packages in the same way that Tom Hanks's character got packages in Castaway. That is so when you watch that, you don't think anything of it other than this is the story of a person who's isolated on an island and it doesn't seem to be trying that hard to get off. When you see the second half of the movie and when you get to the last conversation, which seems to be with a former someone who he was romantically or deeply connected with and no longer is, the movie ends in this conversation, which, as you're mentioning, the audio goes in and out as these fireworks go off in Disney World. And it seems like the island is this sort of state of isolation when you lose someone. And then the second half of it, when he finally is coming off of it, is this attempt at healing, at connecting to people again in the world. I wouldn't call that a manic state. I think this is where we disagree, just because a manic state is an inability to attend to anything because of this sort of overabundance of energy and enthusiasm. He attempts to attend to things. He at one point makes friends with two Russian men who are really want to be stuntmen in Hollywood, and so they kind of practice their stunts together, and they seem to have fun. They go to a club together, but it's, you know, it's kind of a, it's not very satisfying. You could see that after a while he's sort of bored hanging out with these Russians. This connection isn't getting anywhere. He later connects with a woman who he has a sort of what he appears to be a fleeting sexual encounter before he goes off to Disney World on his own and calls up who I originally thought was the woman that he had that fleeting encounter with, but appears to be a different woman, a woman from his past. And it seems to be this effort at healing that doesn't quite work. It's almost as if, yes, we get over breakups, but the damage of breakups are always kind of there. We never really get entirely past it. It's something we carry with us. In this case, this person, Joel, or the character Joel, whatever we want to call him, doesn't seem to have really gotten there. In the end, he ends up kind of taking the island with him. So I think that's what his intention was. And I think he wanted us in that last moment, in that last scene, to recast the two sections of the film in relation to that, which is something you kind of made me see, KJ. I sound like I'm taking credit for all this, but in text conversations off air, we discussed this and you kind of, your insight led me to that. So that's how I see the movie.
So to cut you off before, I just, the manic part to me also was he has no safeties with him. So he is, he's in Florida, which doesn't seem to be where he lives. He's approaching strangers, going to clubs with strangers. If anything bad happens, he has no safety nets. He has nothing in place. So when I guess, you know, when we picture manic, we're picturing, you know, Bugs Bunny going crazy or something. I'm picturing more he's doing risky behavior, which on film doesn't look that risky compared to what we normally see in movies. But he is, you know, far away from home. He's got nothing to fall back on if something does go bad. So just to put, when I say manic, I wasn't talking Looney Tunes. I was.
Yeah. I think that's a good edit. I understand what you mean. There is a sort of sense of lost boy, right? Almost as if like him getting off the island is, no, it didn't really happen, or he's still kind of on his own island. I mean, we're getting into silly metaphors when we say things like that, but he doesn't seem, he seems just as isolated. He's not just as isolated, but he seems still isolated, right?
Well, the result is the same. He didn't make any of those connections.
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't make any of those connections. That's a good point. He doesn't make any of those connections. And his behavior is, it's not bizarre, but I see what you're saying. It's, there isn't any kind of safety net. He's just he's just sailing out to see what's there, mm-hmm. right? And if the boat tips, there's nowhere for him to go. That's a good point. Right. And the interactions we should describe, like, it's one where he's showing a woman how to use a pair of binoculars on the beach mm-hmm. to see possibly where Cuba is. It's things like that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The thing with the two Russian men is the weirdest because he just sort of walks up to them mm-hmm. and stands there and they're like, where are your shoes? And he's like, I don't know. And yeah, it's just.
I don't wear shoes. Yeah. Again, that's also that lack of safety, even the shoes represent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That lack of. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense to me. And I think that sort of comports with my reading as well, is that he is looking for that safety. And it also makes sense when you end in Disney World.
Yep. The happiest place on earth, right? Like,
yeah,
it's the one of the, well, I'll say one of the safest places on the planet, but I have heard, you know, terrible things can happen there. But right. It's a very safe place. However, the fireworks are interrupting us, at least, right? Presumably he could still hear, who he was talking to on the phone, but the fireworks are threatening the audience at this point. We can't hear what they're saying. We can't follow the story anymore. So,
mm-hmm. And they're getting in the way of her, right? She's having trouble hearing him because she's like, where
yes,
are you?
Yep. Right.
And so that's a really interesting moment because it's this moment of the most vulnerable. I mean, we seem vulnerable in these scenes, but here it's the most vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he is doing it in a place that's, I know Disney World's for adults, but it's a place for originally like the spirit of children, right? Which we can all encounter again when we go there or whatnot. But it's this place that's kind of intended for younger people, that people go with their families or go with a group of friends. He's an adult, he's there alone, and he's finally trying to, I guess we could call it, make an emotional or honest connection with someone. And literally bombs are exploding.
right.
It's an absurd situation, but of course bombs are exploding because he's a person without any society trying to express love in the middle of Disney World when he has no shoes or presumably a home. He's just Disney. So it's an utterly absurd situation. There is no possibility for this person to make this kind of connection that he needs. He's just not prepared for it. And I think that scene captures that. So I think this, and this is a question I have for you. I know it's off of our question list, but so it's an experimental movie in the sense there really are no stakes. Right. There's no real sense that he's going to die on this island. You're not entirely sure what's going on the island. He gets off of it in less than 30 minutes. And then most of the movie, he's off the island wandering around talking to people. You don't know what you're waiting for. You're not waiting for anything because nothing's going to happen.
Right.
The island scenes are designed to look cheap. I think mm-hmm, he is mm-hmm. deliberately making these things look cheap. Part of it is he's known as being the $0 filmmaker. That's his aesthetic.
Really?
That's his
okay.
thing. Mm-hmm. And he's had an interview where, not an interview so much as a YouTube video in which he was talking to a camera. So it couldn't be an interview. There's no interviewer. Where he's talking about he wants to watch any movie that's made with $0 because even independent movies are kind of corrupt when money gets involved. So it's a whole philosophy that's behind it. But he's turned it into an aesthetic, right? We know we're watching a man in his living room. It's a sheet with a projector on it.
I loved that. I really like that. The other kind of cool thing was a lot of the videos he was using of the water had a low frame rate, which just, again, like you were saying, he was putting the low budget on display. Like I liked the puppets a lot. Right, they looked very homemade in a good way. So I guess we're kind of answering the question: how did he do with the money he had? I really enjoyed that first half, with the set.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I enjoyed it, but I see what he's doing. Right, it's not when you're like 10 or 15 minutes in, you're like, what is this? Why is this guy putting this out there? This is like self-indulgent, and it is a little self-indulgent, but it's an aesthetic that's connected to this like $0 philosophy. Fine, that's fair. I don't think it's particularly enjoyable, but whatever. My question ends up being though, is it worth it? Because when you do an experimental movie, the idea of an experimental movie is it almost by definition is apart from a norm, a normative structure, normative acting style, whatever it is. And we've all seen normative storytelling, right? It has typically something like a three-act structure. Characters have arc of developments. They're different people at the end. They were at the beginning. If it's tragedy, someone dies. If it's comedy, someone gets happier or gets married or something good happens, whatever. Like we've seen a thousand of these things. We deviate from these stories to do something new, something original, something shocking. There's a cost to it, though, which is the traditional storytelling structure keeps getting made because it works really well at communicating a story. It's a really good vehicle for communication. And Hollywood movies are incredibly good at it and incredibly economic at communicating these things. So if you want to go nutso and do an experimental film, you kind of have to justify it, right? The experimentation has to give to us something more, I think, than just novelty, right? Because that's a real creativity isn't just novelty. It's novelty with a sort of application. And I don't mean it's useful, but it does something.
Sometimes it's an emotional payoff. Sometimes an intellectual payoff, mm-hmm. an enjoyment payoff.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, all of those things. The most famous person, I think, at this point for our generation anyway, somebody like David Lynch, right? Who, if you watch Eraserhead, he's doing very, very strange things, but he is telling us something about what it's like to suddenly discover you're going to have a child, and then you have a child, you know, and he kind of takes the inside of your head when you have that experience and puts it on the outside in a sort of nightmarish way. He's doing something, he's communicating something that a traditional filmmaking style, it just wouldn't touch it in that visceral way. Might be able to communicate it, but it wouldn't give you that visceral feel of, oh my God, there's a baby coming. I'm a film student. How am I going to take care of a baby? That type of thing. So I'll ask you, is this movie justifying its experimentation? Because I would say Castaway does mostly the same thing this movie does.
I hadn't considered that, and I don't think I've seen too many experimental films. I've seen a few David Lynch films, so I understand where you're coming from. I do think, so going back to the manic depressive bit, I think it's one of the best representations of a depressive episode and a manic episode I've seen, in that it's way more subtle than a lot of a traditional story arc might do it. So in that sense, if there is a goal or an application here, I do think this movie does that well. Is it because of the experiment? That I don't know. I'd have to think about that one. What do you think, Tom?
I struggled with it. I don't think so. I think that it's in its zero budgetness and its celebration of cheapness, which I really like. And not just inexpensiveness, but cheapness, right? Like you're saying, the frame rate seems to be slower on purpose. We're making things cheap. That, as an aesthetic, I really like. And I think that's one of these things where somebody could see this and go, okay, this is a means by which I can put my ideas forward. I can tell my story, something like that. And granted, he's not the first person to do this. Other people in the past have done it. On some of our other shows, Pat Gavin has mentioned the film Sans Soleil, which has some sort of similar, what could we call them, expense savers. Say Goodbye to Language, the Godard film from 2012, also has a sort of cheapness to it that I think that I actually really liked. So I would, but when I'm watching this movie, especially in the first half, when you're watching the first 15 or 20 minutes and just random things are happening, he has a photocopier on an abandoned island that somehow works. Maybe it's battery powered or something. And a cell phone magically appears and he's able to talk on the cell phone, but doesn't ask for help. I mean, there are a bunch of weird things, but what we get out of that is he's so isolated, he doesn't know how to ask for help. Right.
Which again, depression, like that's,
yeah,
that's what that is. I mean,
but it's also, you know, kind of a cliche, right? Like all these experimental things kind of lead to this cliched moment. And then he calls back the photocopier people to try and meet find the same guy again to say he's doing well, which also has it kind of feels a little cliched and a little clunky and a little eye rolly. And I think that ends up being the problem. I don't know if, the milk's worth the squeeze in this instance. However, I will say I think the cheap aesthetic has potentially really good followers that could come in its wake. I would like to see people who have something to say coming after him and putting things forward. And I like to see what else he's going to do. He seems like a young man. He seems pretty energetic. He seems like he has a lot of years ahead of him. Apparently these movies don't cost anything to do, so or barely anything. So I would like to see what he does in with future projects.
Do you think a budget would have helped Island?
Well, no, that's the pro I mean, that would ruin everything, right? Imagine it would just be a bad version of Castaway. I mean, it does, yeah. Intellectually, I mean, that whole island scene, where you would use the money is in the island scene, right? Because you would actually have an island and you would actually have a storm and you would see the storm rip the, and it would look amazing. And and they would go to this island and then they would have to build a set that looked like part of the island so that they could film more and blah, blah, blah. I mean, it would just be utterly normal. And at that point, the movie, the high budget version of Island would do nothing different than the low budget film of Island. It would do nothing different. There would be nothing contextually different. So no, it wouldn't. And I think the low budget lets him build up an idea, which is wait for no man, just take out your iPhone and start filming, and the way you do that is you put the cheapness on stage. If you have a big budget, all of that goes away. And what do you think?
This is the first movie where I don't think if it had more or less of a budget, it would help or hurt the film. I think if somebody gave Joel Haver a bunch of money and said, "Hey, you can use this for your movie," I don't think he'd use it. I think he would say, "Oh, thanks," and then put it over there and still make this movie. So I don't think a budget would have affected the movie at all. I don't think he would have used
He's not interested in it,
it. Nope.
right? And he has a YouTube video called, I think it's called Keep Making Movies.
Really?
I think
Oh
it's called
no,
that.
Joel. We didn't mean to take your title.
But I could be wrong, but it was him basically with the puppets. He's sitting there and the puppets are
Oh.
talking, or they're kind of chirping. They're not really in the conversation. He's looking at the camera and he's talking about how much he hates money and film and even the independent studios are really not really independent because of money. It's stuff I don't actually believe, but whatever, this is what he's saying. And he's just saying, if you make a movie for $0, don't spend any money. You can do it. You can do it today. Send it to me. I love watching movies that are not made with any money. And so just do it. And he had this whole thing set up and it seems to be Island is his sort of flag in the sand. His declaration of principles in that sense. And in that sense, it's a success, I think. It got a lot of attention. It has a look, God help us. But in the sense of it is a declaration of principles, it works. Now we're waiting for I think the great artist to use these principles in a more deft way. But you know what? You need that kind of like Gertrude Stein figure or that Ezra Pound figure to come along and say, like, here's how it's done. Here's an idea, and we're gonna work on that idea.
So does it make the keep making movies list for you, Tom? Is it on the recommended list?
I have no idea. We still haven't figured out what is the standard by which we assign things to this list. It's kind of floaty. It doesn't seem quality. Right? If something's very good quality, maybe we'll put it on the list. But that the noir we didn't put on the list, right?
Well, no, because it didn't it the well both noirs, right? Because they both if the goal of Keep Making Movies is to try to understand what the director wanted to do without any interference of a studio, the two noirs that we did in our bonus season, which was Pier 23 and Kiss Me Deadly, there was very obvious studio interference. It wasn't a good example of what the director wanted to do.
Exactly. Yeah, well, in that case, if it's what the director wanted to do, then this movie gets on the list easily.
It's a yes from you?
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely a keep making movies movie. It's a movie made for $0, about making a movie for $0, effectively. That was a brief internet sensation by a young person who is still making, or looks like he's going to still make movies. So it makes a lot of sense, regardless of my qualms about its quality. What about you?
So in a strange reversal, I'm actually going to say no. Because I felt like I was interpreting this film a lot, but I don't know if that's what Joel really wanted to put on to film. But I absolutely want to see more of Joel's films, so I think we'll bring some more of Joel Haver's films to keep making movies to possibly get another one on the list. But yeah, it's a no for me.
Yeah, I would actually be interested in other things he's done.
Well, audience, let us know on social media if this should make our list, since we have the split vote here. And let us know what your favorite movie by Joel Haver is at Talking Studios on social media.
You can rate and review this show anywhere fine podcasts are available. For those viewing in YouTube land, if you haven't already, please like this video. Subscribe to the Talking Studios channel for all our exciting content, and follow us on social media at Talking Studios. Check out other shows by Talking Studios, including Talking Pictures Trivia, where we explore movies through trivia, Limited Lexicon, where we play through text-based adventure games, Get the Point, where we slowly reveal a movie poster and try to guess which movie poster it is. And Adapt It, where we explore adaptations in various forms. Got a question for us? Call the Talking Studios hotline at 201-467-8679 and leave a message. It may be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Keep Making Movies, wherever fine podcasts are found.
Join us next time when we discuss Parallel from 2018. Stay tuned for our first impressions of Parallel. Next week, we'll be discussing Parallel. Tom, how was your watch?
Boy, oh boy. It was, you know, it's a movie. I did see it. It's fine. I watched it this weekend, I believe, and sort of the spur of the moment on my computer on Amazon Prime, which is where the best movies go to flourish. And yeah, it's kind of a frustrating movie. It is about a half hour too long, it feels like. There is a tremendous amount of bizarre continuity problems that really could have been solved very easily, but they don't seem to really care about it. I mean, it's part of a sort of new multiverse genre that's been emerging over the last few years. I guess Infinity Wars or whatever it was the catalyst to this type of thing. So we've been seeing a lot of these, and the movie has some ideas, and we'll get into them next week, but some ideas that potentially could be very interesting to explore. Something about what makes societies different from one another, or what makes differences. The connection kind of between entrepreneurship and artistry is very interesting. The movie's kind of drawing a connection there, but it does absolutely nothing with these connections, and it's kind of hard to watch, and I don't exactly know why. It just doesn't feel like you're waiting for something. I think that's it, and I think that's with a few of these movies where they have an interesting concept but not an interesting mystery. A few of these movies we've watched have an interesting mystery where it's like a guy's in a room and you want to figure out why. And there's a science fiction premise, but you want to figure out what's going on. These movies in this genre of keep making movies seem to work really well in that way. This one, you're not really waiting for something, so it is a long, drawn-out process with a bizarre bit of gore at the end. How about you, KJ? How was your first watch?
So I first watched this 2 years ago in the summer, and I remembered the mirror, and I remembered the energy of the film that... There's a lot of like young, just out of college, maybe. There's like a young energy in the movie. Mm-hmm. That feels pretty good. But I couldn't really remember the plot. So on this rewatch, I got to experience the plot again. Without getting too into it, maybe there's too many characters. Maybe they needed less like primer or something. Like you're saying, Tom, the plot beats struggle to connect. But audience, check it out. It's pretty fun. And you can find it on Amazon's Prime Video at the time of this recording.
Wow, Talking Studios,